This is 2.1, a Netrunner Reboot Project podcast. Episode 103, Nothing But the Truth. Hey, this is Remy. The title card of this week's episode is New Angeles Soul, Your News, which is at Soul, S-O-L, not S-O-U-L, which is one of the three new NBN identities in Data and Destiny. This was probably unsurprising since the last episode was two of the identities. This time we're going to take a look at one deck in particular that is one of the more highly rated decks using this ID on Netrunner DB, and then a couple variations of it. That's the main thrust of the episode, but I do like to start with an anonymous tip, so let's do that. Anonymous tip: 7 things you can do to get better at Netrunner. We're continuing this article from August of 2016, I want to say, by Zenesis, who that's the username for Andrew Hines. And so now we're up to number 6. Analyze your opponent's played cards and archives or heap. The archives or heap is a veritable gold mine of information, so you should always be aware what's in there. It would be foolish not to gain every advantage you can from information that is open for you to look at. Here are a few things that you can learn from looking at your opponent's heap or archives, both over the course of the game and as they discard cards. People don't discard randomly. A lot can be learned by what they put in their bin. How much influence has been used so far, and therefore, how much influence is left in their deck. Very important to know what tricks might be coming your way. How many copies of cards are left in their deck? Chances are, if Gabriel Santiago has played 2 copies of Account Siphon, there's another one there somewhere. What their deck composition looks like, both overall and at the current point in the game. What cards are left in their deck, or face down on the board? As a brief example of this point, if you see 2 pieces of bulky ice sitting in archives, and they're an otherwise low-to-the-ground, near-Earth hub fast advance deck, chances are they don't have much left. What they can get back if they play a card like Clone Chip or Interns. What cards that you've accessed in the past have been discarded to hand size for whatever reason now? What does this mean? What cards are in their hand? This one's another one I want to explain. If a criminal player discards a corroder from their hand, you just learned at least 2 pieces of information. Firstly, they probably have a corroder in their hand, or less likely a way to get one. Secondly, to evidence an earlier point in this section, you just learned that they probably have spent 4 influence on corroder. This can also be, of course, stuff like your opponent discarding economy cards. What does that mean? Remember, people don't discard randomly. To be clear, you can, and in a perfect world would, also get this information as the game is going on by simply adding up the cards they've played as the game goes. But I specifically say archives, or the heap, because that's where it ends up. Sometimes things like influence can be a little mentally taxing to track. Knowing what your opponent has played is the key part of this point, but don't be afraid of double-checking in the archives or heap. to make sure. Well, that again is the sixth of seven things that you can do to get better at Netrunner, according to Zenesis. Analyze your opponent's played cards and their archives or heap. Market research. Let us talk about corp currents. Since the whole point of New Angeles Soul is focused around currents, let's review real quickly which currents are available. There are 11 in the FFG portion of the reboot card pool, which we now have all of. Interestingly, only 3 of those 11 received any adjustments. Most of the runner's currents got adjusted in some way. Runner's currents are generally worse. But only 3 buffs. And of the 11 currents, 5 of them are out of NBN, which, you know, kind of explains why the ID that's focused on currents is out of NBN. So let's run through those 5 NBN currents first, from least to most expensive. Targeted marketing costs 0. You name a card, and then you gain 10 credits whenever the runner plays or installs a copy of that card. Predictive algorithm costs 0. As an additional cost to steal an agenda, the runner must pay 2 credits. Well, that's what it used to be. Now the runner must pay 3 credits. Media Blitz is one of the new ones, costs 2. You choose an agenda in the runner's score area, and then it gains the text of that agenda. I think this card is great in a mandatory upgrades deck. Surveillance Sweep costs 2. The runner must spend credits first for each trace attempt during a run. And then the most expensive current for the corps is Manhunt, which costs 3. The first time the runner makes a successful run each turn, you do a trace 2. If it's successful, they get a tag. Those are the 5 NBN currents. The other 6 are the neutral, Lag Time, whose cost has been reduced from 2 to 0, which says all ice have +1 strength. The other buffed card is HB's Defective Brain Chips, which has gone from a cost of 2 to 0. The first time each turn the runner would suffer brain damage, they take an additional brain damage. The one of Wayland's currents is Paywall Implementation. It costs 0 and is 2 influence. I didn't mark HB's influence. It must be, I'm going to say it's 1 or 2. Probably 2. It's 2 influence for Paywall Implementation. You gain a credit whenever the runner makes a successful run. It's basically Desperado for the corp. There are actually none that cost 1. They mostly cost 0 or 2. HB's other one is Enhanced Login Protocol, which costs 2 and is 2 influence, as an additional cost to make the first run not through a card ability on their turn, the runner must spend a click. The only current for Jinteki is Cerebral Static, which costs 2 and is 2 influence. The runner's identity text box is blank. And then the other Wayland current is Housekeeping, which costs 2 and is 3 influence. And the first time the runner installs a card each turn, they must trash a card from their grip. So there are the other 6, and there you have all of the 11 options that Soul is going to be sorting through. There are some that I think sort of don't fit logically into an NBN deck, like Defective Brain Chips. I think Lag Time, with its +1 strength to ice, is probably not that big of a deal for NBN. Housekeeping, maybe. It's 3 influence, though, and they've got so many other options. Then specifically in Soul, you know, I look at anything that says it's got a trace on it, like Manhunt. It's got a trace to give a tag. I don't know that's what Soul is about. You know, you see trace, I think, making news. You see tags, I think, other NBN IDs. But yeah, there's otherwise, there are several good options, so we'll keep those in mind as we go and take a look at this deck. The Toolbox. The New Angeles Soul, your news. As a reminder, this was a 4515 ID that has been buffed and reboot to 4015 and says whenever an agenda is scored or stolen, you may play one current from HQ or archives. What it means is that usually stealing an agenda is the way for the runner to turn off a current if they don't have one of their own. So this eliminates that ability because it gets trashed and then you can immediately bring it right back out of the trash. So once you've got a current out, if the runner is not playing a current, you're always going to have a current out. Any conversation about this deck in Reboot, of course, must acknowledge the fact that the original version would have been a 49-card deck, and now you can do 44 in Reboot. So, you know, we can keep that in mind, that there are going to be five cards we're going to cut from any one of these decks, and yet still the full 15 influence. So that's nice. Now, I located the deck, which I'm going to be discussing, which is called Better Call Solo Boy, Let's Have a Party by Gum on Shoe. And, you know, this is what I'm going to be discussing. As I was reading some reference to it, it was mentioned in passing that it was a deck based on a deck by the Big Boy. So I don't want it to be appearing like I'm fanboying over the Big Boy and counting and just looking at the decks that he has done. But in this case, that was the original point. It was a deck that the Big Boy put together in November of 2015, so shortly after Worlds, called Paywall Soul. And here is what the deck looked like. It had 11 agendas, which were your 3 Astroscript pilot program, 3 Project Beal, 3 NAPD contract, a breaking news, and your 15 minutes, 3 Jackson Howard, 5 upgrades in 3 Sansan City Grid, an Ash, and a CyberDex Virus Suite, 12 operations, 3 Hedge Fund and 3 Sweeps Week, 2 Subliminal Messaging, so there's a big chunk of your economy, and then the currents were 3 Paywall Implementation and a Cerebral Static. That's the one from Jinteki. Then there are 18 ICE. 6 of them are Barriers, 3 Eli 1.0, and 3 Wraparound. 8 are Code Gates, 3 Pop-Up Window, 3 Tollbooth, and 2 Archangel. And 4 are Sentries, 3 Newshound, which is truly the ICE that's meant to be in Soul. That's the one that gains an End the Run subroutine if there's a current in play. And 1 Archer. The brief comment on it from the StimHack forum, which just this past week all of a sudden disappeared. I don't know if it's temporary or if the owner of the forum is going to go and do whatever they need to do to bring it back, but it may be gone. This I actually was able to pull out of the Wayback Machine. The Big Boy says, this has been working well for me. It can play both fast and slow, depending on the matchup. Cerebral Static turns the noise MU upside down. Oh, matchup. The noise matchup upside down. Along with some others as well. I wrecked a Faust Quetzal with it a few days ago. This deck makes crazy money, and then rezzes toll booths on R&D and a Sansan server. Pretty fun to play. Explodapalooza versus NAPD contract is a meta call. If people don't run as much as you want explode for your econ, if you, people don't run as much, you want explode for your econ. Otherwise, NAPD is better. That's the deck. Then Gum on Shoe took it and made some tweaks, and here are the tweaks that he made to the deck. He took away the 15 minutes and one of the NAPD contracts to put in a Global Food Initiative. He added in a Lily Lockwell. He took away the 2 subliminal messaging also took away a cerebral static and put in 2 targeted marketing. So now he's got 5 currents there in the deck. Took away the CyberDex Virus Suite, to put in an extra ash, up to 2, and then 3 product placement. Then has less ice, removed one of the Elis and one of the wraparounds, and one of the archangels, and the archer, and then put in an architect and an assassin. And here is his write-up. I've posted a variant of this deck before. I took it to a game night kit tonight with it going undefeated to win a max playmat. Play is pretty simple still. I guess I should have gone and gotten his other write-up. You leverage runs from your opponent into an economic advantage. You either use that to fast advance off Sansan for the win, or to turtle up and finish off with scoring windows and a remote aided by Tollbooth or Ash with shell game plays. The deck can go both fast and slow, allowing for a range of gameplay. My winning game tonight required slow advancing all of my agendas for the win, and that's not unusual, though it's rarely required. Usually people use clone chips on parasites for pop-up or some of your trickier ice, and that frees up purges to wipe the clot. More often, you just tax out the runner. And it's pretty often you leverage your Astro token into scoring a 5-3 as your last agenda, be it food or over-advanced Beal. The deck runs 17 economy cards, which means it's usually got enough for the long haul, and Paywall gives you a Desperado. Count how many accesses the runner gets versus you, and you'll see that the card is pure econ. Targeted marketing is also pure econ. Very importantly, they both cost 0, and they both give you money. They also highly discourage normally high-value plays. This means you either have money to deal with them, or the runner slows down and gives you more time to deal with them. This is the most consistent Corp deck I've run all year. I'd run it before RP, before Food Coats, before Meat Shop and 24/7, and even before Biotech Rush, which I very much enjoyed and piloted with much success. Can this deck lose? Of course. But I have an extremely high win rate with it, and it went undefeated tonight. Here are some of the comments and questions that Gum on Shu engaged with from the comment section. From 8 Shanrahan, why breaking news over 15 minutes? The only tag punishment I see is Lily, and it would seem clunky to use with breaking news. Gamonshu says, there are plenty of resources you can snipe with a well-timed breaking news, and I'll always enjoy doing that more than shuffling an agenda back into my deck. Playing 15 minutes isn't a bad move, though. I just feel like the peak power of breaking news is higher, but I'm not ignoring that 15 minutes can self-protect. Valantru says, so one issue I had is clot is a thing. Targeted marketing on clot works well, but having CVS would probably, it's CyberDex Virus Suite, would probably be really useful. I'm not sure what to remove, though. Maybe Lily. Gamonshu responds with, I rarely find advancing and scoring out of a remote to be a problem. CVS was in the original deck, but I didn't use it much. If you can protect a CVS, you can probably protect an agenda, too. Lily did take the CVS spot, so if that's what you want, you could go that direction. But it may also be worth just playing Fastro at that point out of any age. Valantru says, I guess the issue was that they could get into my scoring remote if I left something there, and they would check. This was against Shaper, with too much money. Gumonshu says, if you can keep the pace of the game moving forward, you can usually install something every turn, every single turn, and Shaper has a hard time keeping up with that in the long term if you can get the ice 3 deep. One Noosehound, one Tollbooth, and something else usually does it. Valantru says, so you are icing the remote more heavily than centrals, I take it? What do you typically protect the centrals with? Gamonshu says, R&D, HQ, and the remote usually end up a 3x3, so presumably that's 3 on each. Pop-ups, typically, between R&D and HQ, more towards R&D. Eli, for either the remote or R&D. Archangel, usually for HQ, but it floats. almost always a toll booth on the remote, but stacked newshounds works too, in a pinch. Always build for the expected threat, and make sure you have tacks everywhere, a bit like redcoats in that respect. Zero Hour says, as someone who loves Lily, this might seem odd, but is her rush acceleration and mediocre ability worth it over all-seeing eyes, pure hating on combo DLR decks? So I forget, man, what Lily Lockwell does. One second, let me look it up. Okay, so Lily Lockwell came out in Data and Destiny, an asset that's two to res, and when you res her, you draw three cards. Then you can click and remove a tag to search R&D for an operation, reveal it, and shuffle the rest of R&D, add the operation to the top of R&D. It's three to trash. So it's basically, in a way, it's like a double that costs a tag to put it any operation you want on top of the deck. So, Gumonchu responds to that question by saying, typically versus DLR, you just want to go faster, so it's a matchup I'm happy to see Lily in because of the three-card draw. Also, targeted marketing is your all-seeing eye. Name wireless net pavilion and trash stuff normally. And if they're just on Joshua B, clear the tag with Lily. This deck also has excellent siphon recovery and avoidance patterns. Ash on HQ. Rezzing Sansan before it triggers. Pop-ups and paywall get your money back. Or hold sweeps to force the bounce back. Plus enough taxing ice that the run itself is rarely profitable. Mr. Golden Deal also has a question about this singleton Lily Lockwell, asking if it's just for the card draw. Other than the temporary tags of Breaking News and the Newshound subs, you're not running a ton of ways to tag someone. And Gumonchu says, start of turn clickless draw is very clutch. Second ability almost doesn't matter. It has some use in the DLR matchup, or if the runner decides to float tags. Mittens says, Lily seems interesting, but I'm not certain that she's better than Fast Track. Both can reduce the agenda density in HQ, but often I just want to draw the next Astro. I think that Fast Track is probably better with a Sansan on the table, which is a position I often find myself in. But maybe Lily is more versatile. How have you been using her? And so Gumonchu goes on at some length here in this response. I suppose there's some philosophy here. You don't always have a rezzed Sansan and a scored Astro. You often do, but sometimes you only have Astro and sometimes you only have Sansan. The best runners are going to keep you from having a rezzed Sansan after you've scored off of it. So the best you can usually hope for is an unrezzed one. Games are dirtier than that, and sometimes you luck out and you do have both. When you have both, Fast Track is the best card. You get exactly what you want, and you score it. When you don't have both, it's a gigantic risk. You have to put the agenda in your hand for a turn and advertise that it's there. If you have other agendas at the time, this is really, really awful. And in most games, I'm in this situation without both an Astro and a rezzed Sansan. And when he says an Astro, he means an Astro script, pilot program, token. Agenda counter. The real situation is that I usually would have to sit on the agenda and encourage a run I don't necessarily want them to make. If they don't run HQ to access, they're at least going to be doing something more drastic than what they'd otherwise do. Now, this deck is usually fine with the runner running HQ in the hope of getting an agenda. It's one of the ways the deck makes money. But it's usually best when that proposition is more blind. And I don't think Fast Track does, everything Lily does for us. Lily lets us find out at the beginning of a turn what our options are and gives us our best chance at fast advancing an agenda if it was there. If it wasn't there, we'll be closer next turn, and the runner is going to have giant question marks about what we found. But if it was there, we're going to have three full clicks, less two credits, to get that agenda scored. Lily is also something we can install in the remote. This deck loves to never advance things. It also loves to install advanced things. Putting things in the remote and inspiring question marks in your opponent's head and risk calculations is a big part of creating decision fatigue. You can't do this with Fast Track, but you can with Lily. A potential weakness of this deck is that you don't see a current. If you don't see a current, Newshound, easily one of your best ice, doesn't have an end the run. It's just a more expensive hunter. It's really important to find a current. And while Lily is just a 1X, on occasion she or Jackson will draw you into a current. She can also close the gap, potentially on low ice starts, or get your hand filled up if you have a single agenda in it and you're just ready to have more options. I would mention too, isn't it that, right, she gets an operation, right? Yeah. I mean, so couldn't you, if the runner is tagged, couldn't you use Lily to go find your current? Anyway, it's for this reason that I picked, and would for most NBN decks pick, Lily Lockwell over Fast Track. Their functions are different, and it's arguable that a biotic labor list likes Fast Track more. It's not waiting on a San-San to be sitting out uncompromised, as it's far easier to protect and use your pieces. This list has too many things it could draw that it would like to, and is much less open about what it's doing. It's honest in some respects, but what it has in hand is a secret it wants to keep. If you can't tell by the wall of text, I'm a huge Lily Lockwell fan. So that is the deck and some comments by Gum on Shoe, and this was posted in early December, December 8th of 2015, about 3 weeks after the Big Boys version of the list. It was popular enough to get to the front page as the deck of the week on Netrunner DB, and so that triggers our next segment. Archived Memories. The Fusion Ha review of Better Call Solo Boy. This is the blog that I discussed a couple times, just last week, in fact, and a couple times back, talking about Accelerated Beta Team. It started in September of 2015 and basically tried to review the deck list of the week from NRDB. So, Better Call Solo Boy made the deck list of the week. So here is the article on that from... Oh, I didn't catch who it was from. Andrew B. Is it Chill 84? I think it might be Chill 84. NBN Speed has defined the metagame since Project Beal was printed in 2013. Through this long reign, the only reasonable complaint that an NBN player could make about their faction was, HB Ice is a little better. What a tragedy. Let's break out the violins. The rest of us should all sleep a little bit safer at night knowing that FFG would never print a back-breakingly cost-effective gear check sentry and give it to Yellow for thematically questionable reasons. Right? Suddenly, Jolteons, I believe that's a Pokemon reference, Newshound is the new alpha to the pack of ice dogs. Alone, it's an overpriced hunter. With a tiny bit of support, it's a gear check that you can't pass with just a mimic. This is actually the second blog post I've written about NBN's new identity. Last night, I fell asleep at my desk, and when I went to proof my work this morning, I hadn't written anything particularly profound or interesting about Netrunner. In fact, I had just written the name of former CNN broadcaster Soledad O'Brien 88 times in a notebook. And then he posts a picture of that. Goes on like that for seven more pages. It wasn't pretty, unlike former CNN broadcaster Soledad O'Brien. Soledad O'Brien, I'm doing it again. Guys, I think I have a problem. Deck author Gum on Shoe has already completed a soul pun hat trick with his deck name. See, because it's Better Call Saul. It's Solo, like Han Solo. And Solo, Soul Boy? Soul, is it Soldier Boy? Solo Boy that he's going for with the third one? I'm not sure. Anyway, the article continues. Expect all future Soul decks to be named either Soul Coats or Soul Shop. Not to mention that cool pic of Han Solo in the description, though I'm not as impressed by it this time around. Future NRDB posters should top this by linking to a streaming DVD of The Force Awakens. Before we get to the big question, let's talk a little bit about the deck itself. In Netrunner, the credit doesn't go to who thought of it first, it goes to who shared it first. In this case, we can credit StimHack League winner The Big Boy for his original Paywall Soul, which served as the inspiration for Gammon Chu's deck. The major change was adding more zero-cost currents to ensure Newshound goes online as soon as possible, then padding the deck with money and an extra ash to form a more middle-ranged backbone. If you are unsure of what to name on a targeted marketing, don't sweat it too much. It's probably not going to fire no matter what you name. If you don't have a good read on your opponent's deck, there is no harm in naming a breaker. Targeted marketing is just there to turn on Newshound until you get a paywall. Any other value you can eke out of it until then is great. Some people will claim that naming Clone Ship really messes up a Kate, but install that paywall as soon as possible. Go for the guaranteed 15-plus credits over the maybe 10 credits. The big question. The one that every yellow player has to ask himself at some point is, of course, Soledad O'Brien, will you marry me? Oops. I mean, why don't I just play Near Earth Hub? I'll admit it is getting harder to answer that question lately with Harpsichord shoring up the fast advance R&D weakness, and now this filling in gaps in NBN strategies. The Netrunner team at FFG has done a great job tempting us away from NEH by just printing more powerful NBN identities to choose from. It is especially hard to identify this when playtesting as an individual, because you have a lot of games that you will just win off the raw power of yellow agendas, regardless of which ID power you have. It often comes down to the credits. In this case, you have an ID which literally gives you credits when the runner runs, because of paywall, so you don't have to look hard for the literal value. However, the variance is much higher. You could have games where your ID is blank, or reads, your opponent can't play Clone Chip or Account Siphon, which is virtually the same as blank in practice. It's also possible for you to have long stretches of game where your ID reads, your Jolteons don't work right. Gammon Chu's fifth current and Jackson mitigate these situations, but the fact is that it can still happen. And when you are comparing it to the always-on NEH, I think, despite how awesome Newshound is, that it still comes up short when weighed against that truly broken amount of free card draw and influence. Before you sleeve it up, as integral a part of Lily Lockwell is to this deck strategy, I think we can safely put her back in the binder and replace her with any tech card of your choice. I suggest Interns, but Fast Track, Cyberdex Virus Suite, or Freelancer could be good as well. That's the big trap of pet cards. There's that one time you lab-dogged a Desperado, and then when it comes time to cut old Yeller from the deck, you just can't pull the trigger. Any other suggestions that I could make about the deck would be extremely nitpicky, and ultimately this deck is already well-tuned. Gammon Chu has been working on this build for over a month, and it shows. This deck is well-tuned, fun to play, and it works. Soledad O'Brien. So there is that description. But then there was a wrinkle that was thrown the way of Gammon Chu with regard to this deck, because he posted it in December 8th of 2015, and something significant happened December 31st of 2015 in Netrunner, and it was called the Most Wanted List. And the Most Wanted List levied a lot of hate against NBN. So, how did he deal with that with this deck? Well, let's find out. The Toolbox. New Angeles Soul. Part 2. So this is Solo Boy Carbonite Edition, and I apparently did not write a compare and contrast, so I'm going to have to do this from memory. I believe the agendas are all the same. It's 3 Astro, 3 Beal, two NAPD, one breaking news, one global food. I think that's the way that he had it originally. The assets are the same, three Jackson and a Lilly. The operations are slightly tweaked. Instead of three paywall, two targeted marketing, it's two paywall, three targeted marketing. And he does have an interns in there now instead of the two subliminal messaging. The upgrades are the same. Just one Ash instead of two. The barriers are not the same. Instead of Eli, he's running Bastion. Eli got the Nerf hammer from the most wanted list. The code gates are the same. And for the sentries, he dropped the architect that he was running and added in an archangel, I believe. So anyway, seven actual influence in this deck because of the most wanted list. Here is his write-up. Why so glum, Leia? Before we get into it, I've got to rant a bit. The MWL put me through the seven stages of grief. It was only a month or so ago that I'd finally published a really good deck list, the parent of this one, that I'd begun to suspect was Tier 1, right as the MWL came down. And the MWL hit many cards in the original list. 5 agenda points in agendas, 3 right out from the Sansan, and 3 more from the ice were a whopping 11 points of damage to the influence in a deck that was already, I thought, very tight on 15. But like any man whose deal has been altered, you cope. You wake up in a dank cave surrounded by what you think are enemies, blind, and then you get on with it. You blow up another Death Star because who cares about Darth Vader? We're going to do it. Coping. I wrote this whole article on how I built the first deck. It was a redraft of a wonderful deck from StimHap League Champion the Big Boy. I pretty much just said, good cards only. I cut the Ewoks. I cut Jar Jar Binks. I cut Episode 1. This is what you do to make a good deck. You cut away the flak. In this case, it was a struggle to figure out what was good and how we were going to keep it. Let's talk about the core of the deck, the Agenda Suite. No matter what you have to say, yellow cards are the best corp cards because of Astro. If any other deck out of faction could pay an influence to have Astro, they would. So we're paying 3 for Astro. It's a game-winning agenda even today. Ouch. Down to 12. We were already paying 1 for Global Food Initiative. You'll find a couple published versions of this deck where I suggest that 3 GFI is correct. Those posts are wrong. The original agenda suite is still correct. You still want to have the flexibility to go fast advance or never advance or glacier, and that means 1 GFI, 3 Beale, not 3 GFI, 2 Beale. Cutting a Beale hurts your Sansans. And NAPD is sometimes better at self-protecting a win than GFI, so we're keeping that which makes us best. 6 influence gone. The next question was economy and scoring. Our ID provides us a lot of economy throughout any game. ETF or better levels of economy. We can't lose that. There's no point in playing this deck if we lose that. So I switch the balance of the currents in this deck and go 3-2 on targeted marketing and paywall, respectively. This honestly gives us a much better matchup versus DLR than we had before. And it helps in some other cases, too, when you know the deck is narrowly focused on a few cards to get the win. We only have 5 influence left. If we're playing Astro, that means we want at least some Sansan City Grid. I thought, incorrectly, while I was stumbling blind through the halls of Jabba's Palace, that Sansan only needed to be a 2 of, and that this would allow at least 1 nice ice import. A lot of testing proved this incorrect. There are no ice out of faction that are worth importing that cost 1 influence. 0. Nada. Play 3 Sansan, you dingus. Card wins games. And that left us with 2 influence, which must be spent on Ash. The truth is that if anything hurt this deck, it was the lack of 2 Ash in the deck. This is my least favorite cut. Maybe some enterprising individual could find the cut. Maybe -1 NAPD, -1 Sansan for the second Ash. It'd likely be relevant, but I can't bring myself to do it. That's why we're on 1 interns. We might be able to get Ash back, if we even see it, with interns. But interns can also get us back relevant ice, Sansan City Grid, an agenda in the noise matchup, 1 be a game, or even a J-Howl that's hit the bin that we just need so very much. What's left of our carbonite? How are we going to freeze those impertinent storm runners? We're going to freeze them as they froze us. Revenge. Architect morphs into archangel. Arc for arc feels appropriate. It's the same investment. Hurts a bit more if you neglect David, which you shouldn't. My biggest complaint is that the ice suite is just a tad bit more susceptible to David. Architect would occasionally fire and bring back your ash, other nonsensical plays. But Archangel is pretty good versus Faust, same tax, actually, and taxes that code gate breaker. Bastion is a card I never really enjoyed playing, but it's never existed in a world where Eli costs one or two influence minimum, and if we do our math, we see that Lady still pays the same amount to get in, so no loss there, and Corroder pays one less. Frankly, it's a subpar option when considering the good old days, but this is a new day, and the tax is enough. Wraparound remains for the AI decks to guffaw over, and it's not worth touching the sentries. And that's the deck. It's missing some of what made it a deck I love, but playtesting reveals it's still capable of winning games. Tournament results. The deck went 4-1 on the day, 4 out of 5, 23-person game night kit. I did not have to play as many corp games, though I would have been comfortable to do so. Since I won my first two games in double elimination, it turned out that I only played my corp deck once up there. One loss was to a blackmail spam deck that managed to have both economy and blackmail early, so San didn't stick, and my adventures in Never Advanced Land didn't work too hot. If we've lost anything, it's that the remote game is a little weaker. I wish there was something to be done about it. And maybe this cycle, the new one, the one that we're not going to have in reboot, will give us yellow and or neutral stuff to make up for the losses. But at the very least, I can look forward to sniping blackmail and recursion out of hand because of targeted marketing. And just a couple of comments here, just one that he responded to from Mike J.S. I played a slightly modified version of your previous deck, 15 minutes for breaking news, fast track for Lily, Cyberdeck's virus suite for one of the product placement. I think fast track is fantastic. The amount of times I've had a three-click turn of fast track for Astro, install onto San, advance an Astro counter for another 2 points in a counter is scary. CVS is really only to burn through clot, and I'm not 100% sure it's worth the slot. Did you test Fast Track? And if so, why didn't you include it? And this, I guess this comment was made before the previous list, but Gum on Shoes then responded saying, I find that if a San sticks, I don't need Fast Track to have an agenda to score. Usually, they don't stick, and Fast Track just means, hey, run my hand. It's not a bad card, and there are decks I like it in. It'll even do work. And a ton of really good players won't leave home without two fast tracks in a deck. It's a reasonable include. It's just one that I don't need. And that wraps up our discussion on this Soul deck. The original by the big boy, the slightly modified version, explained at length by Gum on Chew, discussed by Fusion Ha, and then modified after the most wanted list to something a little less good. Dedicated Technician Team. Tempo Soul. So this is a new segment. It's going to be the name for the corp segments that discuss the pre-constructed decks in Reboot. I didn't really imagine this is how I was going to start discussing pre-constructed decks. I was going to do them on their own, but like it just seemed like it fit here so well. So we're going to take a brief look, because it's not a deck that I've played with, a brief look at this pre-con. And it's just a different approach than this previous deck that we've been discussing. I don't believe I've even played against this deck, though. Naturally, there are a lot of cards here that probably wouldn't have been worth including without their reboot buffs. Character Assassination is a 3-of, for example. Red Herrings is the upgrade in the San slot. And Predictive Algorithm is the build round current. And RSVP is a 2-of in the Ice Suite. I think largely due to Red Herrings and Predictive Algorithm. And of course, there are only 44 cards rather than 49. So it's just a different approach. Let's take a look at it. Here is the deck. There are 9 agendas, still 3 Astroscript pilot program, now the 3 character assassination, along with 1 global food initiative, 1 Project Beale, and 1 15 minutes. 3 Jackson Howard, that's the assets. The 12 operations are 3 hedge fund, 3 sweeps week, 3 blue level clearance, and 3 predictive algorithm. The 7 upgrades are your 3 red herrings, 2 ash, 1 Oaktown grid, and your typical 1 CyberDex virus suite. And there are only 13 ice. It is a 44-card deck. 3 barriers in 2 Eli and a wraparound, 7 code gates, 2 pop-up window, 2 RSVP, an enigma, a toll booth, and an archangel. And then the 3 sentries are all newshound. Here is the piloting tip that's provided with each pre-constructed deck. Here's the one provided with this one. Quickly assemble a huge pile of taxing upgrades. Use them, along with predictive algorithm, to score character assassinations and Astroscript pilot programs, pressuring the runner so they can't catch up. Big tip, it typically pays to only lightly defend R&D for quite some time. Predictive algorithm makes early R&D pulls even less valuable than usual. So in this case, we're looking at just 3 currents in this deck, just the predictive algorithm, and I guess you dig for them with Jackson Howard if you have to. And blue level clearance is going to help you dig for them too. And so that predictive algorithm gets out there. You want that out early. And one of the advantages of the reboot buff to the identity, dropping it to only a 40-card deck, is it makes it easier to find those currents. Still, 3 out of 44 cards is about 1 in 15. The big boy's original version of this list with paywall implementation had 4 out of 49, which is a little more than 1 in 12. So your chances are still lower. You're really relying on your card draw to dig you into that one as soon as possible. As far as the reboot effect, the cards that have been altered that are in this deck that have been buffed specifically, obviously Astroscript has been nerfed. Global Food has been restricted to just 1. But most of the other, I don't think there's hardly any other nerfs in this. Newshound has been slightly nerfed. But the buffs, Character Assassination, your 4-2 agenda, now trashes 2 resources instead of 1 when it's scored. Blue Level Clearance, which is your double that costs 2 and gains you 6 credits instead of 5, and then also draws you 2 cards. So you're gaining 4 and drawing 2. So that's like, see, that's gaining 6, right? So that's like 2 Beanstalk royalties put together at once for the cost of 1 card, except you're getting that card draw. And that's really, I think, what it's after here. The money is nice, the card draw is important. Predictive algorithm, the cost to steal an agenda going from 2 credits extra to 3. At first, I was a little surprised to see no NAPD contracts in here, because that would also make things more expensive to steal. But I guess here you're looking for more offensive power than defensive power, hence the character assassinations. But this making things cost more to steal is really the theme, because that pairs with RSVP as well, the code gate whose strength has been bumped from 4 to 5, which makes it much harder for Yogg to deal with repeatedly. The ability is the runner can't spend any credits for the remainder of the run. That's going to make it really hard to steal those agendas if predictive algorithm is out. Red herrings is one of the upgrades. Its trash cost has been boosted from 1 to 4, so it has a better chance to live, and it's going to make you pay 5 more credits to steal an agenda. And then Oaktown Grid, that's the other taxing upgrade. There's just 1 of them. Its trash cost has been increased by a little from 3 to 4, and it makes other cards in its server cost 4 to trash. So what you're looking for, hopefully here, is predictive algorithm on the table, and then you have an agenda with both red herrings and Oaktown and probably ash you also want in there, all in that server. That's the dream server. And if you're able to do that, then you've got, for them to be able to steal the agenda, They have to beat the ashtrays and then pay eight with predictive algorithm, eight credits to steal that agenda. Or if they can't beat the ashtrays, rather than just being able to trash ash, they have to pay an extra four because of Oaktown Grid to trash ash. Or if they want to trash Oaktown Grid first, well, now you're paying eight to trash that before you spend. It's just a lot of money. It's just making agendas really hard to steal once you get set up. The smaller deck size is going to help you get set up faster. And the big boy, I could not find the spreadsheet that explained this. But the big boy did say that this is on the easier side. He gave it a complexity rating of 2 out of 4 for as far as being able to figure out how to play it, how to pilot it. So there is your first small analysis of a pre-constructed deck. It is tempo soul. Tempo there because every time the runner can steal agenda, you've sucked away a lot of their tempo and opened yourself some scoring windows. Well, many of the cards, but especially the deck lists discussed in this week's episode are linked in the show notes. Music is from Alexi Action. The website to redirect you to the Reboot Project homepage, netrunner2.1.com. Come to the Reboot Discord server. Not only do we have later on this week the pre-constructed league starting up, but the next constructed league is starting next week. That's the one where you can bring your own decks and especially cards from the boosters. That's another option available for joining the Reboot Discord server. But you can play games on your own on Reteki.fun. The AstroScript pilot program this time around returns us to the Worlds of Android book, where we look at a couple of more domes inside of Heinlein, the district of New Angeles that's on the moon. Thanks for listening. See you next time. Starport Kaguya. A constant stream of shuttles and cargo pods go up and down Earth's gravity well, often via the Challenger Memorial Ferry. While some corporations and private enterprises maintain their own landing pads out in the docklands, the bulk of commercial and civilian traffic comes through Starport Kaguya, nestled in the Hypatia C crater. With the rise to prominence of Heinlein, it too developed, and in time it became the moon's principal spaceport and base of the Heinlein Authority, which regulates space traffic around the colony. With arrivals and departures equal to the busiest of Earth's airports, Starport Kaguya extends across the 15-kilometer diameter of Hypatia C. Multiple landing domes cluster around its center like the buds of a flower reaching for the sun, while in their shadow, dozens of hexagonal domes spread out to the very lip of the crater itself. The upper levels of the launch zone are always thrumming with activity as bioroid work crews guided by suited human engineers make quick mechanical checks and system repairs between the shuttle's relentless docking and launch schedules. Many consider Starport Kaguya the lifeblood of Heinlein, and the costs to lunar industries and habitats would be considerable indeed, were it to ever stop flowing. For many that come to the moon, Kaguya is about as far as they get, just as the Lunar Tourism Bureau intended. Heinlein can be a dangerous and unpredictable place for the unwary, and tourists who wander off into far-flung modules or even the docklands looking for adventure often find more than they bargained for. To keep the number of missing persons and tragic accidents to a minimum, District Manager Hubbard has seen considerable resources poured into the expansion and refurbishment of Kaguya to turn it into the shining face of Heinlein. Hotels, ranging from the extravagant to the reasonably priced, ring the spaceport, their viewing decks affording impressive views of the moonscape, and, for about half the month, Earth itself. Recreation parks and tourist centers surround these, allowing visitors to experience the wonders of low-G sports, or look at some of the moon's proud history, such as the Treaty of Heinlein, which stands on display just outside the main shuttle terminus, encased in its own transplaz tomb. The tourism board tends to downplay mention of the now infamous Battle of Kaguya that ended the lunar insurrection but ignited the war. Then there is Starscape Shopping, a retail paradise that caters almost completely to the tourism market. All manner of things can be bought, duty-free, on its dozens of retail levels. Products of lunar industry such as low-gravity engineered nav watches, regolith mineral gems, and the latest offerings from the Lunar Synthetic Labs of Hasbioroid in Jinteki are just some of the delights visitors can purchase. Starscape also caters to the notion that there are some things you just can't do in normal gravity, and comfort clubs, G-tattooists, and liquid bars are all things more discerning customers can sample, should they so choose. With so much to offer, it is little wonder that many tourists never step onto the Tube Lev to Lunasent, content to spend their vacation in the safety and comfort of Kaguya. Angel Arena. For those who are after something more active, the Angel Arena is Heinlein's main venue for low-G sports. Located just outside Lunasent, its crowds can enjoy a spectacular view of the stars and the game at the same time. Many terrestrial games have their equivalents on the moon, like G-ball and aero hockey, played with what are colloquially called Heinlein rules. Teams from Earth will routinely visit, with athletes training for months to prepare for the challenge of low-G sports. Heinlein's own Lunar Leopards G-ball team spends its off-season Earthside to build up its players' muscle density so they can execute impressive feats of acrobatics on the field. Perhaps the most interesting games are those between Bioroid or clone teams. Always sponsored events, both Hasbioroid and Jinteki enjoy showing off their merchandise in these exhibition matches. Docklands. Stark against the dazzling domed heart of Heinlein is a brooding, dark horizon. Half-constructed habitats, faded factory hubs, and skeletal landing ramps reach up from the cold gray surface. A forest of steel and shadows that hides Luna's most dangerous criminal elements. This is the Docklands, and only the foolish or the brave stray too far into its underworld. The Docklands are located beyond the major domes of Lunasent and its complex tunnel networks. It is an area of both expansion and industry for the city, arrayed around Heinlein in a wide circle of landing pads, warehouses, and heavy industry. Although nominally under the control of District Manager Hubbard and the NAPD, the Docklands are a gray area, sitting between the law of Heinlein and the wilderness of the greater lunar surface. That it is almost entirely privately owned and operated only adds to the NAPD's problems, since officers often have to secure permission and complex warrants before they can even set foot within its warrens. Even so, the Docklands are a vital part of Heinlein's economy, and all the major corporations and scores of minor ones have a stake in its cargo and industrial operations. For locals, the division between Central Heinlein and the Docklands is a clear and obvious one, and they avoid certain routes and places. For tourists and other visitors, however, it can be easy to wander off the beaten track and end up somewhere that you are not meant to be. This wouldn't be so much of a problem If the Docklands were just the rough-and-ready construction and shipping district their vids present them to be, in truth, the lax law enforcement and the chance for profitable enterprise has made the Docklands into a haven for Heinlein's criminal elements, and even the corporations turn a blind eye to the gang activity as long as it doesn't impede upon their profit margins. Literally hundreds of gangs and org crime syndicates have corners carved out of the Docklands, ranging from the wasters and vapor heads that prey on lost tourists up to smuggling empires like the Catala brothers. Most, however, are like the dust haunters, who scavenge scrap and machinery from construction sites, or people like Ortega Jones, who run the air tax and recycling rackets. In their eyes, at least, they provide a legitimate service to Heinlein, and as long as the city is buying, they'll keep on selling. The Catala brothers. Sadly, for every Lufkin and Hubbard trying to make Heinlein a safer, more prosperous place, there are people like Sasha and Yevgeny Catala, carving out their own personal kingdoms. The men are the sons of the infamous Alexei Catala, former superintendent of the mining consortium at Leonovsk Station, a heritage that has its advantages when it comes to bribery and intimidation. Like their father, Sasha and Yevgeny are ruthless bosses and unscrupulous businessmen, and despite what the Pestroka Technika Public Relations Department would have you believe, they run most of the mining and helium-3 contracts to former Russian bloc and other mafia enclaves. From their personal dome in the Docklands, the brothers maintain a small army of mobsters, and they have been implicated in dozens of open NAPD investigations. Yet, as long as they stay in the Docklands, they remain out of the authorities' reach. I know full well what the corps and org crime are doing out there, but I'm afraid that until someone picks up a las rifle and tries to storm Heinlein, there is nothing I can do for you, sir. SXC Lieutenant Wantanbe to District Manager Hubbard concerning Docklands murders.